Hello and welcome back to the Natural Womanhood podcast. My name is Grace Emily Stark. I'm the editor of Natural Womanhood, and I'm here today with the second episode of season 3 of the Natural Womanhood podcast. And I'm really excited that on this episode today, we were able to talk with Jamie Rocci from the Hormone Genius podcast, which I heartily recommend everyone go check out after listening to this episode of the Natural Womanhood podcast. Today, we talk with Jamie about what fertility awareness and restorative reproductive medicine has to offer those who are struggling with miscarriage. If you're someone who has recently had a miscarriage, I want to just kind of put a little bit of a warning on this episode. We do talk about our own experiences with miscarriage. Assess where you are in your healing from that and whether or not you can listen to this episode at this time. If you can, I think you're going to find a lot of really great information, a lot of really heartening information. And I think it's so important that we share these stories and to share the resources that are available for women struggling, especially with repeated miscarriage. It's not simply not true that you have to suffer 3 miscarriages, as mainstream medicine will have a lot of women often believe, before you can get help for these issues. And we're definitely going to do a deep dive into all of that today on this episode of the Natural Womanhood podcast. So stay tuned and enjoy. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Natural Womanhood podcast. I'm so excited to be here with Jamie Rocci today from the Hormone Genius podcast and the Fiat Institute. Jamie is a fertility care practitioner and founder and former director of Guiding Star Clinic Cedar Valley, a nationally branded nonprofit women's healthcare center. She's passionate about her business, the Fiat Institute, which I just mentioned, where she certifies women to become hormone coaches and have their own at-home business, empowering women to understand the beauty and genius of their hormones. All things we can definitely get behind here at Natural Womanhood, for sure. So, Jamie, thank you so much for being on with us today. I'm so excited to have you. This is the second episode that we're recording for season 3 of the Natural Womanhood podcast. And I think it's just really perfect timing because we're recording in October right now, which is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness. And so the focus of the episode today is going to be on miscarriage. So I do just want to put that disclaimer out there for our listeners. We are going to be focusing on that topic. Obviously, it can be a sensitive one. So take that as you will, and know that we're going to be getting into some of our, Jamie and I both unfortunately have miscarriage in our own background. We're going to be getting into some personal stories. Before listening, maybe assess if you're in a place where you can listen to this. I think it will be a very fruitful conversation that we're going to have. We're going to, not just talk about our personal experiences with miscarriage, but also recovering from it, trying to prevent it from happening again. So I think there's a lot here for any woman of childbearing age to really get a lot from in safeguarding their own health, the safety of their future pregnancies and of their babies. So without further ado, Jamie, can you introduce yourself a little bit further for us?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. I love Natural Womanhood. It's such an important mission and organization. And for any hormone fan, hormone nerd, like, you can totally nerd out on on your guys' blogs and your podcast. It's just wonderful. So yeah, thank you for having me on. Just like Grace said, I'm a co-host of the Hormone Genius podcast with Teresa Kenny. Teresa Kenny is a women's health nurse practitioner. She's a medical consultant, and I'm a fertility care practitioner, just like Grace said. So I've been doing this work for like 14, 15 years. I really just discovered the issue with women not getting the information they deserve while I was a graduate student at my college. And I studied this topic. It's how it turned my heart on fire. I interviewed medical professionals in my community to ask them, like, why don't you share this with your patients, with your female patients? And that's when my whole life changed. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's because these doctors, most of them never learn about it.
They don't know it themselves, right?
It's easy. Yeah. So that's kind of how I am here with you today, is just from that kind of that like righteous injustice feeling, like, you know, we deserve to know this, and it's the unfortunately medical systems, and we can right that wrong. And so again, I applaud you, Grace, for being involved with Natural Womanhood, because you guys do good work.
Well, you too. Yeah. I think this is a long overdue convergence here, having you as a guest on the Natural Womanhood podcast. Because yeah, we're both in this space and doing really great work, just bringing awareness to women, to physicians, just about what's really been missing in the women's health space for so long. And I liked the point that you made too about your master's research, that doctors themselves just don't know about this. And I feel like we can kind of fall into, and especially with the topic that we're going to discuss today, miscarriage, we can fall into a demonization of physicians for not doing better, but they can't do better when they don't know better, which is why, you know, the organization facts, we love them so much because they're the ones working on that piece. I love that we are all doing our own thing, and it's all so important in its own way. And facts is working to correct the misinformation or the non-information that medical school students and physicians and their continuing education just do not get about authentic women's health. So yeah, it's so awesome when we can get together and find out what other folks are doing in this very important space, and it's all so needed. So excited to have you here today.
Yeah.
And to dive into this topic. So the reason why I think it's actually kind of amazing, it feels very fortuitous to me that we chose this month, kind of on a whim. I just began recording the third season of the Natural Womanhood podcast. Just happens to be October, happens to be Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness. And the first episode I recorded last week was with a couple who had had a vasectomy and then a reversal. And they're now expecting again, which is awesome, wonderful news. Awesome. That was a great episode to open with, I think, because they talked about their journey in being so fearful of being open to any more pregnancies, and specifically pregnancy losses. They had a couple really, really hard, well, all miscarriages are hard, but she ended up having to have a DNC for at least one of them, you know, just really heartbreaking experience, and didn't have great support on the other side of that, and just really made their decision to have a vasectomy as a couple out of a lot of fear, and understandably so, right? For not wanting to go through all of that pain again. And it was through finding a fertility care practitioner and learning that there were some things that they could do to hopefully prevent a future miscarriage that opened them up again to the possibility of wanting to welcome new life. And so again, had the vasectomy reversed and they're expecting again. So just a wonderful intro to this season, and a great intro to this episode too, right? Because that's how profound and devastating the experience of miscarriage can be, that it makes you want to throw in the towel altogether on your fertility if you don't feel like you're going to get the support, whether it's emotional or physical, that you need should that happen again. Because it's devastating. You've lost a child. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't know what to say when that happens. Well-meaning people, family, friends, you know, pastoral care, providers, medical providers, you know, the things that you hear when you have a miscarriage really kind of blow your mind, that you have to remind yourself people are trying to say from a good place, even when it hurts to hear it. You know, I myself, I think I've shared before, had a miscarriage. We miscarried our first after trying to get pregnant for over a year. So it was very devastating because we were so excited to finally get pregnant. And then at 8 weeks, I miscarried. and I wasn't home with my regular doctor. My husband and I were visiting his family. And the doctor who did care for me wanted to jump right into talking about IVF as if that was the right time and place to have that discussion. You know, I was still bleeding. And yeah, just, you know, hearing from people, well, there must have been something wrong, so it's probably better that this happened, and, you know, that sort of thing. And I am really, really grateful that my personal doctor back home when my husband and I were done visiting his family and I was able to go see my regular doctor who had been treating us for infertility using some Napro techniques, some hormone balancing, some different things, that he was of the mind that, you know, something terrible happened. He was going to support me through it the best way that he could. And he wasn't going to make me go through it over and over again before working on the problem, because that's what we hear from so many women, is that you have to have, you know, 3 miscarriages before anybody will take you seriously. In most of mainstream medicine, for with physicians who aren't trained in restorative reproductive medicine, like Napro or Fem or Neo, you hear from women. I had a friend who had 2 back-to-back miscarriages, and her OB told her, you know, oh, you just got unlucky twice. When she tried to press her to get testing. And so, yeah, thinking back to that couple in the first episode, of course, if you've already had a couple of kids and you're like, well, we think we might be done anyway, let's just do the vasectomy so we don't have to go through this heartbreak over and over again. You can, anybody can put themselves in that space and understand it, right? And I want to talk today about how we can help women not make such drastic decisions, women and couples, not make such drastic decisions out of fear around pregnancy loss. So I'll turn it over to you now, Jamie, because I've been talking plenty long at this point.
Well, what you're saying, it is such a good point. And I think specifically in regards to, you know, you're like this pregnancy feeling dismissive, you know, like this miscarriage, I should say, this pregnancy loss feeling dismissed. And it makes us feel like, and I hear this from women who are in perimenopause, menopause almost, like if I'm not pregnant or like fertile, I don't feel like good enough to be like taken care of almost, you know? So when we're pregnant, yeah, we gotta be taken care of. Like the pregnancy is healthy and well and da-da-da. But then if something is unfavorable, I have hormone imbalance or I'm approaching menopause or I had a miscarriage, it's almost like they didn't learn, the medical world didn't learn about how to manage those cases. And I feel like it's getting better, just like you said, with facts and everything else. But I think the key question here for your listeners is really just wondering and thinking to yourself, like, when does that life begin? If it does truly begin, which I believe it does, at conception with unique DNA, you know, this little baby will grow to be a certain height and have browner blonde hair, will be funny, will be good at music. Like this unique being has been formed. And so if that is your belief, which it is for me, that's why it's so heartbreaking. You know, like, I think that's the key, is if we're interviewing doctors and we're thinking, who would be a good doctor to support me in my health as a woman? That would be a key question to ask them. Because if you do experience loss, you're going to know you're going to get the care that you really need to support that healing. Whereas if that was not the viewpoint, that likely wouldn't be how they would support you, because they don't even believe that that's true. You know what I mean? They don't see that life the same that you see it.
They might value the suffering that you're going through. And, you know, if they're a good doctor who, even if they don't believe, you know, that a unique, unrepeatable human life begins at conception, which, you know, science has confirmed that. But if someone doesn't believe in the dignity of that life, I guess we should say, you know, there, I do still believe there are good doctors who care about their patients enough that would see them suffering and want to help them through that. But they're limited, right, in their tools and in their ability to empathize when they don't see the loss the way that you see it.
Right. And I think that's where it explains maybe why there's this, oh, try 3 times and then we'll do something. I think that's why there's that number, And that's, I guess, my point in saying that. I think if that viewpoint were different, then I think it would be a little different in terms of the number of times, even though we know that that woman is struggling and I might not have the same viewpoint. I think that is just a key part of what plays into the quote unquote, how many times we have to go through this. You know what I'm saying? I think that kind of plays into it. But with my own miscarriage, I'll share that story. So I was getting trained as a fertility care practitioner through the Creighton Method, and I had just had a baby the year prior. So our daughter was one at the time, and I'm one of five kids. We wanted to have a lot of children right out of the chute. So we had gotten pregnant a year at, like, when my daughter was a year. And through my charting patterns, I knew, like, I had gotten my period about 3 months, like, after, like, postpartum. So my daughter was three months and I got my period right away. So, I mean, I had been cycling for months, and we thought, let's give this a try. So we did achieve pregnancy, but I had known from my training that I had just started that my charting pattern was telling me that I probably had a luteal phase defect because my luteal phase was short-ish. So normal, we say, is around 12 days. Mine was like around the eight, nine day mark. And I had some brown bleeding. And so again, I wasn't a pro. I was still, again, the learning stages of this all. But I just remember thinking, I really want to get this checked. I'm pregnant, but I want to make sure my progesterone levels are high enough to support a baby. So I went in and to the midwife who had delivered my daughter, and wonderful woman. But I felt it was an unfortunate circumstance because when I went in and shared my concern, she dismissed me, like, kind of like, oh, you're into natural, so just trust your body. You trust your body. It's almost like she was making fun of me. She knew what I was doing with Creighton and with as a fertility care. So she was kind of using it as like a weapon. She's not a bad woman. And she probably felt comfortable enough with me maybe, but that didn't feel good. Cause I didn't feel heard. So she just basically kept saying, you trust in your body, right? Just trust your body. Like, basically your feelings aren't valid. So I went back home and I couldn't stop thinking about it because basically I went and I didn't get what I wanted. I wanted her to just run my progesterone. Right. That's all I was asking.
Which is not a big deal, right?
Right. I'm like, what kind of labor would that, like, what does it take from you? Very little.
I'm always blown away by the pushback that you get when you ask for progesterone monitoring, because it's a single blood draw, like, and it goes to a lab, and yeah, I'll pay for it. You know, like, yeah. I'm always blown away at the pushback you get from that. But sorry to interrupt. I just,
it's frustrating.
I've had it before, well, and it's mind blowing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a confusing time. I'm like, this doesn't seem right. Yeah. And you're supposed to be, you know, she's a midwife. So you would have even thought more so.
Yeah, you would hope, right? Yeah.
So anyway, I was just frustrated and distraught. And I thought, oh, because, you know, the moment for me, and I bet a lot of listeners and a lot of people just generally, they get their positive pregnancy test and they're already imagining, I start already imagining a double stroller. Like, okay, I need to buy a double stroller. We need a big car. Like, the moment that happened, it was like my life, my world changed, my thoughts changed, including what this new life would be like in our home. Okay. So I'm having these thoughts and I'm going to the doctor or the midwife and she's kind of dismissing me and I'm thinking, man. So I call the closest NAPRO doctor who happened to be in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I live in Iowa. And it was over Christmas, which didn't help. And she had actually been very sick. So she didn't get my message until the week after. Finally, she got it. Jamie, I'll do anything you need. And she ordered the progesterone for me, which is awesome. But it was too late. So I had started miscarrying already. And again, it was a very early, I think it was maybe 7 weeks, like a 7 week miscarriage. And I remember writing that email back to my midwife or like letting her know what was happening. And she took me out for lunch and apologized. She said, I'm so sorry. I think like that, having that happen, I think actually made her stop and think about our, and even since then, she would send people to me to chart. So in a way, wow. It had this like very powerful resolution in a way, you know, where, but the reason I share that story is because even as a fertility care practitioner in training, I felt shame and I felt guilty that my voice still wasn't loud enough. Like, if I had pushed more, if I had insisted, I mean, I probably didn't insist enough. So I think many women feel that way. And I don't know if you feel anything like that, Grace, when you had your miscarriage, but I did. I felt like it was my fault. And I think a lot of women tend to think that. They tried to comb through anything it could have been. Was it the food I ate? Maybe there's bacteria in my lettuce. Maybe I had wrong, like weird something. Maybe I smelled something like bleach accidentally. Or,
yeah. You know, we go through for me, things. It was because it was on the heels of, you know, struggling to conceive and being treated for infertility. It was, oh, you know, my body just can't do this. Because those were the feelings I was already struggling with, yeah. Was, you know, what did I do to my body? You know, I kept going back to how I'd, you know, over-exercised and under-eaten for a period of time in college and lost my period for an entire semester. And ever since my period came back after that, I'd had, you know, a luteal phase defect. I didn't realize it at the time, but the short luteal phase, tail end brown bleeding. And so when I learned about that and kind of how, you know, losing my period and the way I was treating my body in college, as so many young women do, could have been a contributing factor. That was something I really had to work through. And I don't even know if I fully worked through it until my previous pregnancy. I'm pregnant with, that's technically my fifth pregnancy, my fourth living child. And I think it was the pregnancy prior to this one where I had a midwife kind of pull that out of me, that I still had not really come to terms and forgiven myself. She told me I need to actually write a letter to College Grace and forgive her for that she didn't know better, that she, you know, and that brought me a lot of healing. But yeah, heels of, being treated for infertility to then have a miscarriage, my struggle was, well, this is just proof that my body can't do this, that I'm broken, that I did something to myself, and, you know, this is just how it's going to be. Yeah, it's amazing all of those feelings that come up when you have a miscarriage. And I do think that is our knee-jerk reaction as women, for whatever reason. I'm not sure why. Right. But we do blame ourselves, don't we?
We do. And I want to make sure that's a really beautiful thing, by the way, that your midwife had you write a letter to your college self, because I think that could be even, yeah, anytime where there's healing, that's such a beautiful exercise. But something that, you know, I just want everyone to know is it's not your fault. It is not your fault. It is not your fault. Just like you said, like, it's like we were made to find, like, maybe it's for survival or something like deep within us, but we are trying to figure out, like, we're natural problem solvers, and it's often easier to blame ourselves than others, or just it being happenstance or a luteal phase deficiency. Yes. But, you know, I had to learn something really painful, that day that ultimately actually, like, was used for the good. And again, not to say I would want that to be repeated necessarily, because that was hard. But there was a silver lining. So is there always a silver lining? Maybe. Do we always see it? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But it is not your fault. And that's sometimes really hard to believe. So I like that letter thing that your midwife had you write. That's such a beautiful healing.
Yeah, it was funny because the practice had 4 or 5 midwives, and you met with each of them over the course of your pregnancy. And that one, when she came in for our first meeting, she goes, "I just want to let you know, I'm the emotional midwife." And what ensued was like an hour-long therapy session. I'd never been to any kind of therapy, but I imagine that that's exactly what it's like, because it was, and I was sobbing by the end. And I'm like, wow, that was an apt disclaimer that she came in with.
Oh, it's beautiful. That's incredible.
Yeah. God bless women who will, you know, take the time to sit down and have that just heart to heart that so many of us need. And that can be easier to have with someone who's not necessarily very close to you, right? Sometimes those are better conversations to have with someone who can stand outside of everything and see just kind of that third party perspective. But yeah, I think too, what might be part of the issue with the response that so many of us get from our medical providers, you know, that you got unlucky sort of response, is that they don't have enough tools in their own tool belt to deal with right. it. And mm-hmm. I think there's almost like a fear there of admitting that maybe there's something they don't know. I don't know. I get the sense of that sometimes yeah. with medical providers, maybe especially, you know, not to hate on OBs or female OBs in particular, but I almost feel like I get the sense from them where they think you can't possibly know more about the female body than they do because, mm-hmm. well, they're a woman and they're an OB. And so when you come to them with, well, can we do this kind of testing? I have seen some of the biggest pushback from female OBs and the experience of friends and stuff. And I think it comes from a reluctance to admit that they don't know enough and that they don't have the tools to do the right kind of testing, to do the right kind of supplementation, whether it's with hormones or different things. What do you think about that? Have you gotten that sense?
I think you're right. I think that, you know, having started a healthcare center in my community, I've formed a lot of connections with amazing doctors and PAs and NPs and midwives and all of that. And you can tell when you're talking to somebody if they really are if they're a learner, if they really want to understand, and they just were never told. And then there is a huge difference, like you just said, between the people who really care and they just never, ever, ever, ever knew, and they would want that information. Please share me that with me that information. And there again are the providers who really, like you said, I think you're right. I think there is like this pride or maybe like shame for not 100% understanding. And we do put doctors on a pedestal. Like it's a power frame they have. Like doctors are so powerful. And so I think that they feel that power. And if they don't have the answer, it makes them feel less powerful. And when I say power, I truly mean that. Like, you know, we think about, you know, we raise our children and we hope we raise our children really well to understand and know why we believe the way we believe about what we put on our bodies, how we manage family size, XYZ. But you better believe that if our children go to the doctor and the doctor disagrees with what we're saying, we hope that what we shared with our children will stand a chance. But even still, that's still hard to know that there's a power frame of a doctor. I was even an adult getting trained and I couldn't stand up against it almost. So there is this. And whether they know that's the power or not, or they're exercising that power or not, which is why, again, I think it's important to interview our providers always. There's going to be some that we mesh well more with others, and there are going to be some that, you know, and I think that's the key. But another thing too, Grace, I want to make sure I say, which is a big reason, I just want to shout it from the rooftops, basically. I'm going to switch gears just a little bit. Something that is never talked about, I don't think ever, I had never heard it. Maybe people talk about it more now, but I want to be a voice, is after our miscarriages. Okay, so we know like leading up to our miscarriage, like we have these signs. Often, sometimes we miscarry because, again, it is a genetic issue and literally there's nothing we could have done. And my personal miscarriage, there's no way to know if it was a progesterone issue. It seemed like it probably was because of my charting pattern, but there's not one way at all for me in that moment to have known exactly why. So there is... We can't always know, but about a third of women would miscarry, maybe due to some progesterone issue. If there's good research on that, it's something I've heard, but I don't 100% feel like there's good data really proving that. All right, so here we go. After our miscarriage, so for me, so the miscarriage was difficult, but I got through it. Like emotionally, I was fine. But 2 months after my miscarriage, all of a sudden, one day, I just stopped sleeping. I could not fall asleep. It was confusing. Looking back at it now, it was because of my low progesterone. It never bounced back up. I already had low progesterone, had a miscarriage, pardon me, and it just never booted back up. So my low progesterone was causing terrible insomnia. Like Jamie, with low progesterone, not a healthy woman. And we all have different ways of experiencing hormone imbalance. But that, I think, is something hardly anyone talks about. We think about after we have babies, like, oh, I'm postpartum and I'm experiencing postpartum depression, which is also something I struggled with. Let's get progesterone, postpartum progesterone that will support us. We don't ever talk about postpartum or post-miscarriage progesterone support. But I suffered for months and I didn't know why. And it was terrifying. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm restless or I just can't stay asleep. It was like my body wouldn't let me relax. So it wasn't until I started taking the right supplements. I started getting rid of the crap in my house. I turned every stone. I couldn't figure out what was the deal. And then later, of course, come to find out, check my levels again, super low. So I just started changing lifestyle. I just changed, like, sometimes too, we think progesterone is the magic band-aid, which it's great during times, definitely. Like, sometimes we definitely need it, and I've used it a time or two for sure. But for me, it seemed like more of a chronic issue that I really wanted to try to get to the root of. So it was really through lifestyle change. But that's the thing I want to make sure people know. Like, anytime we talk about miscarriage, let's think about what support can we give to her hormonally after.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so important. And regardless of whether you want to wait to try to conceive again, or right. if you want to jump right back into it, right? We need to better support women who are on the heels of a miscarriage for sure, emotionally as well as physically. Mm-hmm. What do you think we can do to encourage medical providers in that vein, to get them into the idea of, you know, no, this is important. This is a signal that something wrong happened. And here are some very basic things that you can do just to help out your patients a little better when they're struggling with this.
Totally. I'd say three main things. One, if the doctor is not connected with somebody trained in teaching the cycle, that's very important. We know doctors don't have all the time in the day. They're very busy. Their work is very important. They don't have the time to sit down and teach people about their cycle. Most don't. So first step is doctors find a fertility care practitioner, a FEM instructor, somebody to teach charting, whether you have that person even in your office or you create a relationship with them, somebody to teach the woman what is normal, because you're going to get more data from that patient than you would have otherwise when she comes with like this roadmap of her cycle. Second thing is understand yourself, what is normal in your cycle. There are patterns that give us information about the health of our progesterone. So post ovulation, we have progesterone like a roller coaster. It goes up and it goes down and it should look real nice. Most doctors think that the day 21 lab, which is the day that you check your quote unquote progesterone, assuming we ovulate on day 14, so it's a 7 day out, 1 week out from the assumed 14 day ovulation, day 21, that lab is not appropriate for most women. It's only appropriate for 13% of women, actually, because 13% of women actually ovulate on day 14. So it is important for the doctors to know, when did my patient actually ovulate? And really the best way for that information to be gathered is to understand charting systems yourself, whether it's FEM or Creighton or Marquette. FEM is a really easy little, not very expensive, not as like crazy in terms of time commitment. So often doctors like to start with FEM medical management, but there are others. Or getting connected to somebody who can communicate that to you. That's the second thing. Third thing is know what your hospitals that you're partnered with. If you work at a hospital, or if you have a clinic and you're associated with the hospital, or if you deliver babies at a hospital, know what their process is. Know what their process is. So when a woman goes in and she's miscarrying, or she has to deliver a baby that died in utero, like, what happens to the remains? How do we honor that baby? How do we honor that family? And so I'm going to put a plug in for a program called Behold Your Child, Behold Your Child Ministry. So directing a nonprofit healthcare center for 5 years, we had miscarriage infant loss support as a very key aspect of the healthcare we provide for women and families. And so we got really we got a lot of practice and serving the woman, not just the woman, but the husband and the family, serving the whole family in this loss. And it's so important that that woman feels seen and heard. So anyway, we partnered with Behold Your Child Ministry, which is a program through the Archdiocese of Dubuque in Iowa, but they do provide training at either free or little cost to anyone who wants it. And they've gone into our hospital systems in our town. They've gone into healthcare centers. They've trained church leaders. Like, they will train anyone, but it goes so far as to talk about the stages of loss of the woman and the stages of loss of a man, what to say, what not to say, how to support them, what to expect physically, but also how does your funeral home, how can your funeral home support them in terms of ceremony and memorials? And then how can your hospital support them? And so our hospital, the way our hospital serves women who've lost babies now is not the same as 5 years ago. It's different. They have scripts. They say not scripts, but the nurses and staff now know it's a baby. I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry for your loss. And it's a completely different experience now than it was before, simply because they just now understand the process and it's all written out for you. So that's the third thing, is find a system or some program, and Behold Your Child's wonderful, to get in contact with so you can start providing, this approach for women.
I believe there's another, and the name is escaping me, but I know I've written about them before. There's another organization out in California that does similar trainings.
Awesome.
And gosh, I wish I could remember the name of it. But we can link to all these resources in the notes for the show. But the thing that, when I interviewed them, the thing that really stuck out to me was the idea of disenfranchised grief, that grief is already painful enough, but when nobody sees it, when it's not franchised, when it's not recognized for what it is, it's this feeling of disenfranchised grief. And when a medical provider, the people who come in contact with someone who is grieving, who's had a loss, just acknowledges the loss for what it is, just the huge difference that makes. I can remember the most meaningful thing that happened after our miscarriage was my husband's aunt sent this bouquet of beautiful flowers. Mm-hmm. And it was wow, I just cried. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really even understand at the time. It took a while for me in reflecting on it to realize why those flowers meant so much. It was because what do you do when you find out someone has a death in their family? We often send flowers. That is a cultural sign of acknowledging loss. I mean, it's on obituaries, where to send flowers or what to send in lieu of flowers, right? Mm-hmm. And so that gift of flowers after that miscarriage was just, oh my gosh, it was everything. Mm-hmm. And it was because somebody saw my grief for what it was and responded appropriately. And that's why I always send flowers after I find out someone's miscarried, because it just meant so much to me. Mm-hmm. So I, what else do we want to talk about here in terms of miscarriage and whether we're talking to women who have had one, who are terrified of having one again, who are maybe newly pregnant or trying to get pregnant and are afraid of it, because we've all Googled miscarriage symptoms before, right? Even if you have a healthy pregnancy, I don't think there's a single woman who doesn't at some point Google it, because you get a weird pain or you get, early bleeding is not uncommon even in a healthy pregnancy. I think it's up to a third of women will have some early bleeding. We've all Googled it. What are the warning signs to look out for? What are ways that we can better advocate for ourselves, for our health, our baby's health? That's a lot that I'm throwing out there. Pick what you want.
Yes. So first step is chart your cycle. If you're trying to achieve pregnancy and you're not charting your cycle, I know sometimes as a fertility care practitioner, you know, sometimes people look at you kind of cross-eyed when you're like, you should chart your cycle. Well, we're trying to achieve pregnancy, and but we don't need to, you know, we don't need to avoid right now. We're just going to let it play by ear, which is totally fine. Totally fine. But if we're struggling with miscarriage, it would be really good health data if you were charting your cycle, because we could get more information on where that support is needed. You know, and if it is a luteal phase defect, and there are three different types of luteal phase defects. So if it is that, we would have a better sense of kind of where to support you and how much to support you. I have a friend of mine who is a doctor, and she got pregnant a few years ago. She was telling me, it's like, so are you going to go on progesterone? And she's like, I'm always going to go on progesterone. She's a doctor. She knows, she's trained in NAPRO. She's like, it's a won't hurt, will probably help sort of thing. Not to say, but in saying that, I've worked with clients that are so hyper about their progesterone that they can't enjoy anything about being pregnant.
Yeah.
Because of fear.
I've been in that boat. Not,
right? Yeah,
absolutely.
Yes. It is like this surrender, and it's hard to say that. It's like, what's our temperament? What's our temperament? Like, if you're wondering, what is my temperament? Just ask yourself, like, what was the last thing that really bothered you, and how did you respond to it? Did you ruminate? Like, if you couldn't figure something out, did you research everything about it? Did it take up most of your thinking? If it did, then, you know, we have progesterone as a tool.
Was that choleric? So that are you describing cholerics?
Oh, yeah. Probably without even realizing it.
Yeah. Because you're describing me, and I'm pretty sure that's what I...
You know, like, it's like, how do I put this down? Like, and I think the number one thing is this: if we think about our thoughts and just the psychology, like the science of our psychology, the things we tell ourselves often are the things we believe. So the only, like, one strong way to combat that rumination and that fear is to pre-prepare the thing you're going to say in response to it. That's the main tool that'll make any sort of dent, is what noise are you going to make to combat the noise that's already being made. So if every time I wake up and I'm like, I'm afraid I'm going to miscarry, I'm so nervous I'm going to miscarry, we pre-prepare and think, sit down with your husband, journal about it, but say, what am I going to say instead of that? Or if I catch myself saying it, that is what we need to do. Visually, we could put affirmations around, or, like, you know, the word trust or surrender or whatever. So there's a healthy balance of that. And there's a healthy balance of getting, you know, the support medically that you do need, making sure that you are getting your levels monitored. And then just ultimately knowing at the very end of the day, this is my best advice I give people and the best thing that anyone has ever said to me. So I say it to everybody all the time. You are doing all the right things. You are doing all the right things. You know, when we feel like we can do something, we feel we have some sort of control. It makes us feel better. If someone's telling us, Jamie, you are doing all the right things, it affirms me and it tells me I am doing something, and that's all I really can do, you know? And then everything beyond that, I have to set aside. And ultimately, acknowledging, although this is hard, especially there's a lot of fear, acknowledging, like, that life in me in this moment, in this present moment. It's not like, oh, it's a life in me in a month. No, it's a life in me now. So let's observe that and acknowledge that sacred reality, you know, and enjoy that moment.
Yeah.
For what it is.
That reminds me of something a really wonderful friend said to me too, when I got pregnant right after our miscarriage. And I, you know, opened up to her about how I just was living in this fear that it was going to happen again. Yeah. And she told me, don't let worry steal your joy. You know, that every day that you have with your baby is a day to be joyful. And to not let that worry — I'm getting choked up thinking about it because it was such a profound thing, you know, to not let worries steal your joy. Because it, like you said, just acknowledging, like, I am carrying a life, and it's a life that has value no matter how long it's present with us. He or she is present with us, and to take joy in that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's what it's all about at the end of the day, right? Yeah. Is this wonderful gift that we've been given as women to conceive and carry and deliver and nourish new life and to appreciate that gift in its totality for what it is.
Yeah. And even as you were saying, like, I'm thinking to myself, okay, what does that baby feel in our womb? Okay. So the baby feels comfort because of the rhythm, like because of what it knows to expect in a sense. So like the heart beating whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. It's like a rhythmic, it's something they can expect, right? It's comforting. And I don't know about you, but I know for me and even our children, like if we comfort them, there is something about rocking and going, shh, shh. Okay, what does that sound like? It sounds like a heart from inside the, so even asking your spouse, like, can you rock me and just go, shh, like just shush me, like calm me down. Cause there is something so innately comforting about just feeling loved in that way, because it's how we were first loved, what we first knew as comfort. And there is something, like, again, very viscerally biologically comforting about the shh, shh. Even that alone, I think, is sometimes helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think appreciating the different way that men and women will grieve in the wake of a miscarriage, yeah, too, that you kind of mentioned earlier, there it is different. But men grieve miscarriage too. I think often there's an idea that maybe it doesn't hit them the same way. It isn't the same way, but it doesn't mean that it's not there.
Right.
I can remember, I mean, I cried myself to sleep, I think every night for a month after I miscarried, and my husband held me like you were just describing every night. excuse me. And after like a week, you know, he cried with me. But after about a week, he stopped crying. And he even apologized to me and he said, I'm sorry, I'm not, you know, I still feel it, but I can't cry anymore. And I told him, you know, that's fine. Just, you know, you're holding me. Just, yeah. I've got enough tears for the both of us. So yeah, having that support from your partner is just, oh gosh, it's everything. That if you're not feeling it in the moment, you know, that doesn't mean that they're not experiencing something too, and that maybe they're holding it together for you, because men do feel like they have that on their shoulders. You know, they might be trying to hold it together for you, and before you know it, they might be breaking down a month or two later. Everybody's grief is on a different timeline. And again, that's what we're talking about, right? This is grief, undoubtedly. Right. So, I am stuck on something that you said earlier, the hormone nerd in me, that you mentioned there were three different luteal phase defects. So I'm thinking, we're going to have you back maybe at some point to talk about that. If not just to scratch my own curiosity itch, cause that was news to me. But overall, you know, there's been so much in this episode that I hope our listeners, you know, find comforting, find hopeful, find helpful. I really want everyone to take to heart your advice to interview providers and to get that sense of, you know, if I come into you and I'm pregnant, are you treating two patients or are you treating one? Right. I think is a great kind of succinct way to put it. To find somebody that will, you know, hold your hand through this should you experience it. Because the fact is so many of us do, right? Gosh, it's amazing. Is it 20% of pregnancies or something like that?
I think it's more now. Yeah. The statistic that I always reference is like the 20%, but my co-host Teresa and I, we did a podcast recently and I think she said it's closer to 25%. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is why it's so important. And I thank you so much for coming on today, Jamie, that we talk about it, that we let women know that they're not alone, but then that even though it is common, it's still fine to fall apart. You know, you don't have to feel like, well, so many women go through this, I just need to buck up and get over it. No, it's common, just like death is common. It's a reality we all have to deal with, but it's something we all can take that time and that space to cope with and to work through, hopefully, and do that in comfort from our loved ones, from our providers who are hopefully doing what they can to support our health and the health of any future pregnancies we have. What do you want to end with, Jamie? Last word.
Yeah, I just want to echo like the importance of interviewing your provider, but also just really getting to know your cycle. And most of your listeners probably are getting to know your cycle, or probably know their cycle already. Yes, find somebody to connect with, and you know, also just kind of have a sense of that, of like your temperament and your personality. One of the things I think is such good advice that a pastor friend told me that he does for people preparing for marriage is he has them talk about it before they're even married. Like, what are we going to do if we lose a baby, you know, or like, what is our plan? What do we need of each other? Because it's so common, it's going to happen to most of the couples, you know? So even just the pastor priest kind of supporting those couples and having a sense that this is a reality and it may very well happen, and kind of having like that contingency plan sort of idea, like what are we going to do if/when, you know? So I think even just thinking about that too, although I don't want people to feel like they have to live in fear of that.
No, but it's almost part of a broader mm-hmm. realization again of we're all going to experience grief in our lives. Yeah, death is a reality. A parent will die, you know, something. Yes. How are you going to handle that grief? How do mm-hmm. I hold your hand and support you through that grief? Those are very important things for couples to talk about, even outside the context of pregnancy loss. It's a broader, mm-hmm. it's a broader discussion. For sure.
Yeah, totally. And if anyone is wanting to, you know, get in touch or follow Hormone Genius Podcast or Fiat Institute, we have like social media, Instagram stuff, so they can always check us out there too. A lot of good work's happening right now, Grace, I think, in our world, and the lights are starting to click on and hearts are getting activated to really be supporting women in an authentic and whole way. So again, I'm so
thank God
honored that you have me on. Praise the Lord. Totally.
Finally.
Yes, finally.
Long time coming. Well, Jamie Rachi, thank you so much for being on the Natural Womanhood Podcast today. I don't think this will be the last episode we have you on. We'll look forward to doing more with y'all in the future at Hormone Genius. So thanks.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Natural Womanhood Podcast. We, again, are so grateful to Jamie Rachi for being with us on this episode, and we're excited to debut the next episode, episode 3 of season 3 of the Natural Womanhood Podcast in a few weeks. And in that episode, we're going to be talking to Ellen Holloway. She has an excellent podcast called Charting Toward Intimacy, where she really delves into kind of some lesser discussed aspects around sexuality, especially as they're lived out in marriage. I love everything she's doing on her podcast. So I was super excited when she reached out and wanted to be on the Natural Womanhood Podcast. And the thing that we're going to talk about together is, why don't more people know about natural family planning? Why don't they know more about fertility awareness? And what can we do to get the word out better? And she's got some interesting ideas about that. She has some interesting programs that she's running that I'm just really excited to share with all of our listeners in a couple of weeks. So look for that episode soon. And in the meantime, please check out, as always, naturalwomanhood.org.